This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning. This is Derek Haskins, Communications Director for the South Dakota Department of Health. Thanks for joining us today for our daily COVID-19 update call. We'll start out with Dr. Clayton giving us an overview of today's cases and data updates. And then Secretary Malsom-Reisden is here as well, and we will take your questions. I'll go ahead and turn it over to Dr. Clayton.
Good morning. We are reporting 61 new cases of COVID-19 in the state. This includes 7 new hospitalizations. We do have 2 new deaths to report as well, both individuals from Minnehaha County. We have 100 new recovered individuals, as well as 161 total negative tests that have been performed. Our totals for the state are 2,373 COVID-19 cases. Of those, 868 individuals are considered active cases. 1,492 individuals have recovered from COVID-19. We have 165 total hospitalizations and 13 total deaths. We have 14,460 total negative tests that have been performed as of today. The breakdown of cases by county include 2 cases in Brown, 1 in Charles Mix, 1 in Day, 4 in Lincoln, 1 in Lyman, 47 in Minnehaha, 2 in Moody, and 3 in Union. The age range of cases include 2 individuals in the 0 to 19-year age category, 8 in the 20 to 29-year age category, 17 in the 30 to 39-year age category, 11 in the 40 to 49-year age category, 12 in the 50 to 59-year age category, 7 in the 60 to 69-year age category, and 4 individuals in the 80-year and older category. The cases by sex include 27 that are male and 34 that are female. The community impact map is being updated today. We have 2 counties that are in the process of stepping down from substantial to minimal to moderate activity. This is a new process. We have 2 of those counties being Beadle County and Lawrence County that on the map have moved from substantial to that minimal to moderate community spread. The definition for that is that there are no active cases in the county for that county to be able to step down from substantial spread. We will also be updating the website to denote when those counties move from minimal to moderate spread to no current spread of COVID-19, and that will occur after there are no new cases in a county for 28 days, which is 2 times the maximum incubation period for COVID-19. We do have information that's available on our website that is relates to the governor's back to normal information that was relayed yesterday. Overall, as you can see from some of that data, we have a decreasing trend in our influenza-like illness, as well as decreasing trends in our number of COVID-19 cases, both statewide and for Minnehaha County. The information for the deaths that in total are being reported. So we have now, as totals again, this is 2 deaths in Beadle County, 1 in Girald, 1 in McCook, 8 in Minnehaha, 1 in Pennington. The deaths by age range include 4 individuals in the 50 to 59-year age category, 3 individuals in the 60 to 69-year age category, 1 in the 70 to 79-year age category, and 5 in the 80 and older category. deaths by sex, we have 11 that are male and 2 that are female. Those are my updates today.
With that, I'll unmute the lines and we'll take your questions.
This is Mark from the Black Hills Pioneer.
Go ahead, Mark.
We've learned that a number of people currently living in Lawrence County have tested positive for COVID, have not yet recovered. Our community leaders are planning on removing limitations they put in place following the state guidance, and since there are, quote-unquote, no cases here, as indicated on the state's COVID website. Since these patients have permanent addresses outside of our county, their positive test cases are not counted as local, but they tested positive here in Lawrence County, and they remain living here. So our community leaders are basing their decision on incomplete or inaccurate information. Does this matter to the Department of Health, given that it is, you know, a relatively small handful of folks, as long as they're following guidelines?
So the information that we have available is, of course, focused on county of residence. So we are actively, you know, monitoring individuals as they go from being cases and being active cases to those that have resolved their infection, which is, again, focused on an individual having a decrease in general symptoms of their illness and the minimum of 7 days after their illness onset and a minimum of 3 days have to occur after their last day of fever. So with that criteria, you know, we're using that to base information as we do for our step-down focus on that community impact map. The information, you know, that's on the ground in terms of where individuals are at any one time where they may be just choosing to complete their isolation is information to know, but is also something that you know is not information that is specifically applicable to the community spread map.
Next question.
JP from KORN News Radio, can you give us an update on the COVID-19 cases at Smithfield, please?
Sure. So we have 853 cases among Smithfield employees, as well as 245 cases among close contacts that themselves became cases.
Next question.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Todd Epp, Kello.com News in Sioux Falls.
Go ahead, Todd.
This is for the for Secretary Molson Risden. I'm trying to understand what the governor's back to normal plan does, and I'm going to use my hometown of Harrisburg as an example, so bear with me for a little bit. Let's say I own a bar and grill in Harrisburg, and I decide to reopen, and I don't have any sort of limits on how many people can come in. I don't require my staff to wear masks. I don't require the clientele to wear masks. I tell my staff that if they're sick, they can go ahead and come in. Is there anything under that order, under those guidelines that the state of South Dakota could do to me for not practicing what is suggested under those guidelines and by the CDC?
Thank you, Todd, for your question. So the back-to-normal plan for retail businesses that promote public gatherings, so that would include the situation that you're describing, is the direction from the governor is to resume operations in a manner that allows for reasonable physical distancing, good hygiene, and appropriate sanitation, consider restricting occupancy, and continue to innovate. And that has been the practice of businesses up to this point, and that's the expectation that they would continue so that people can be safe. And so that's what the plan entails.
But let's say I don't want to do any of those things. Is there anything that can happen to me either as an individual or to my business for not complying with those guidelines?
So the enforcement of these kinds of things has been really dictated at the local level. And, of course, cities have some ability to create ordinances relative to the situation that they see in their community and their need to enforce, actions of businesses and others.
So, and I know you're not the governor, but you advise the governor. So would you advise either Harrisburg or Lincoln County in the situation I describe, which is not a true situation, but I'm just using things that go on in my community, would the state government interfere or look down upon either Lincoln County or Harrisburg enacting ordinances that would crack down on the behavior that I just mentioned?
Well, I think the governor's stance has been and will continue to be to support local governments making the decisions that they need to make on behalf of the folks that they serve.
Next question.
Okay, thank you.
Jeremy Kugelberg, Forum News.
Jeremy, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, just wanted to get another day of about 200, a little over 200 tests. And just, I know you said over yesterday that weekend numbers were slow, and I think also mentioned that, you know, this is based off of what doctors send in. And I'm just wondering, just for some extra clarity, third day of pretty low testing numbers. Can you give us a reason for why that is?
Well, I think, that's based on individuals that are presenting to those medical providers and the discussion about whether their symptoms, fall into the category of whether or not they should be tested for COVID-19. I think one of the areas that we continue to evaluate and to push out there is that opening and making sure that individuals have the capability of getting tested, of course, under the with guidance from their medical provider. And so we're going to continue to make sure that language is pushed out there, that individual medical providers have that perspective, and we're going to be reinforcing that on calls with those specific groups, as we move forward throughout the week. So we do have our standing calls where we have an opportunity to address those concerns, and individuals within the community of medical providers have an opportunity of chatting with us, and so that's where we're going to have our focus of making sure that they understand where the state is at in terms of opening up testing.
Okay, and then one follow-up question with Smithfield is, would you say you're substantially done testing Smithfield cases?
This is Kim Olsen-Rice, and I think when we talked yesterday, I indicated that we're ready to do mass testing. If the Smithfield situation requires that kind of effort, we have a plan in place to make that happen.
And I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that, Smithfield has been closed for 2 weeks. So, any subsequent, exposures that are occurring, whether it be to members of the community or Smithfield employees and so on, is occurring, from that standpoint of community transmission. So we are actively differentiating that, and our case numbers will reflect that appropriately.
Okay, thanks.
Next question.
This is Ellen Bardash with the Daily Republic.
I heard the Daily Republic.
Yes. Considering the Federal Bureau of Prisons said that Andrea Circlebear was held at the Winter City Jail before she was taken to the federal prison in Texas, where she ultimately died after contracting COVID-19, is there any concern for the health of others in the Winter City Jail, and what actions, if any, are being taken to address that?
So I think the focus really is on the available guidance and the focus that in the individual jails have in terms of safeguarding their population. There's sufficient guidance out there from CDC so that they can take appropriate precautions both for the correctional staff, any other law enforcement officers, as well as anyone who is in a law enforcement custody.
Next question.
This is Lisa with the Argus Leader.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Just wondering, there's two cases now in addition to the 30 in Brown, and just wondering if those two cases are connected to the DemCoda.
So the two new cases that we are reporting today, you know, are associated with the Demkota plant up there. And so we're continuing to monitor the situation, actively work with the management at Demkota and make sure that, you know, they're taking the proper precautions to safeguard their workforce.
Next question.
Good morning. This is Joseph Barkoff from the Capital Journal.
Go ahead, Joseph.
Good morning, y'all. So I had a question about antibody testing. You know, the lead up to it is they don't know, you know, coronavirus, studies on coronavirus say that the immunity is it's a limited time, which is why people get the flu shot every year and stuff. They don't know if there is an immunity yet. They also don't know what the duration of it will be when they find one, hopefully. How important is antibody testing going forward?
So,
thank you.
And I think you've done a great job of really elucidating what some of the difficulties are right now around understanding how helpful antibody testing will be as we move forward. What I can say is that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are actively reviewing, you know, what antibody testing really means for public health as far as well as for the community at large. I think, you know, there are some tests that are out there that are coming online that have, you know, better capabilities than some existing tests. And so we do need to look at any test that is being used, you know, looking at specifically what are some of the overall limitations of that test specifically, and that is something that individual providers, as they're ordering that test, need to have those discussions with their patients.
As a quick follow-up,
go ahead,
please. Thank you. How we know how the tests are being done for COVID? You know, they've got the PCR and the rapid and all the other apparatus and such. How are the tests done for antibody? Is it like a prick of a finger and under the microscope, or how is this test done?
No, there are a couple different ways, but it does require a blood draw in order for an individual to get an antibody test. So that is, you know, the specimen collection is a little bit more involved than just a finger prick, but that the specific nature of how those tests are performed and how they're identifying antibody is going to be based on the individual test, so I can't really speak of the generality.
Next question.
Carol Eggers from NBC News.
Do
you have a number for the total number of employees or close contacts associated with the Demkota beef plant?
In total, we have 13 individuals that have been identified as employees of the Demkota beef facility. We don't actively have those that are considered close contact, we will not be providing information that relates to those that are close contact. The focus there for kind of Smithfield was the potential kind of risk within the community, and given the much smaller numbers that we're dealing with in terms of cases at Demkota, that's not something that we feel is relevant in this situation, but specifically towards the number of cases, we'll continue to monitor that situation.
Final question.
This is Lisa with the Argus Leader.
Go ahead.
And, yesterday you presented one of the slides where you had the map of all the counties and the statewide lab capabilities, and there are quite a number East River, but very few West River. I'm just wondering if you think there's enough testing being done West River at this point.
Lisa, this is Kim Olsen-Ryson. So the map shows the location of actually instruments. The backup for places that where there would be a provider but not instruments would be commercial lab capacity where they can, mm-hmm. Take the specimen and then send it to a different lab to get the result done.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all for joining us today, and we'll visit with you again tomorrow.